Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Come on, let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And welcome to another edition of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn and Glenn Gilbo. We welcome you to another Tiger Rag Radio. And on this frosty Tuesday night, hopefully everyone is, for the folks up in Northeast Louisiana, North Louisiana, dealing with the ice storm. Thoughts and prayers are with you. Very difficult situation. Hopefully the power and the heat will be back on here shortly, and hopefully for those that are been impacted by the ice storm and tuning into our show, hopefully you'll find some enjoyment of it and take you away from the troubles of your life. But we do have a good show for you here, lined up for you. Patrick Wright, the voice of the Lady Tigers, he will join us in about 30 minutes. LSU women's basketball, they've won five in a row. Will likely win again Thursday when they take on Arkansas. And then they got another softie coming up on Sunday against Alabama. And then a big game coming up a week from Thursday against Texas. But they are playing very well right now, regardless of who they're playing at the moment. We got to talk transfer portal, of course. A big signee coming down on Friday night with Jordan Seaton to put the finishing touches on a great recruiting class or great transfer portal class that Lane Kiffin has been able to secure. So just absolutely fantastic stuff there from Lane Kiffin. And then we'll talk some baseball as well, as Nate Yeske will join us as well. So great show lined up here for us tonight. And guys, how you doing? How you dealing with the cold?
I haven't even noticed the cold. Is it cold?
Come on.
I'm still going through transfer portal withdrawals. So
yeah.
Bad. I mean, I just can't get over the fact that this thing's over with. It was such a rush, man.
Yeah. It was pretty impressive what has been able to happen. Your thoughts on the Jordan Seaton signing?
My biggest thought is that Lane Kiffin has done a phenomenal job. I've mentioned this before, but he's just come in and completely re-energized the LSU football program. He's brought a work ethic and a tenacity to, you know, if it was clear in this transfer portal that he was able to get Sam Levitt and Jordan Seaton the way he did, just never giving up, going above and beyond, jumping on planes, going to Atlanta, going to Knoxville, respectively, to sign both of them. Or get them eventually signed, I should say.
Or just show
interest.
Show interest. That's very important during recruiting, you know, to be there. Like, remember when Ed Orgeron showed up at the airport just to see one of his guys take off? That defensive end, I forget his name now. But, showing up and being at games, you know, that's the same philosophy, what Lane was doing, being in Knoxville and Atlanta.
And he doesn't rest. I mean, he turned around this week, even though the portal was closed, and after Seaton basically had been signed, sealed, and delivered. And he was all over South Louisiana and, well, Louisiana in general, at high schools.
Yeah, well, that's coming up too. You know, a week from Wednesday, February 4th, is the high school signing day. And what's cool about this class, he's basically got a high school class in it. I wrote about that the other day. There's 21 kids that are underclassmen, And quite a few of those are unranked, haven't played much. But, you know, that's kind of like a high school class, but they've had that taste of college. Like the USC quarterback, he's barely played. But
Hassan.
He's better than like a guy out of high school, you know, because they've been there. And there's some projects in there. But, you know, he's also got like he's got 9 of the top 10 ranked guys. He's got the number one quarterback, the number one offensive tackle.
And 41.
Yeah.
41.
Who would have thought that they would have more portal players than degrees of temperature it's been the last few days at night, man? I mean,
it's amazing.
But I've been so happy just to see like 35 on my little temperature deal in the house.
I know. It's like all right, wow, yeah.
I can turn the water off now.
No, but I mean, you know, seriously, with Lane Kiffin, this is the best college transfer portal class of all time.
Well, it's only since 22. But
that's okay.
I know what you're saying. And, you know, not one number one signing class coach made the playoffs the next year.
I think that might change.
I think it will. The 22, Lincoln Riley had a really good season, but they didn't make the playoffs. That was only the 14 playoff. And you know, Lane had the number one class in 24 and barely missed the playoffs. Of course, Kelly had the number one class this year and missed the playoffs by about 4 games.
Yeah. and think about that. Think about the difference between last year's number one transfer
18 guys to 41.
Yeah, but not only that, the quality.
Yeah.
I mean,
he had some studs in that class, but only a handful. He's got like a dozen, like, really studs.
But can you imagine
class.
If Brian Kelly would have had to rebuild his entire wide receiver room in a transfer portal, rebuild his entire quarterback room in a transfer portal, rebuild his entire offensive line in the transfer portal?
Yeah.
I mean, LSU's offense next year, with the exception of Caden Durham and Harlan Berry is basically completely rebuilt.
Yeah.
Trade as green.
Yeah, and you know, people would say, well, Lane's got a lot of money, and you know, some of these fan bases that are mad that he's not their coach, like Ole Miss, Florida State, Florida, and LSU rivalries, probably Alabama soon. You know, they're saying, oh, well, he's got all this money, he's just paying the players. Yeah, but he's also got to know which players to pick, you know. And that's why, you know, and he's known as a talent guy. He's the best person at inventorying talent since Nick Saban retired, according to Nick Saban's friend, who's a good source. You know, so he's got that eye for talent.
So inventorying talent, meaning actually bringing in talent to his inventory.
Yeah, and seeing that they're good,
evaluating
and then getting
them. Yeah, evaluating them, bringing them in, closing the deal.
Right.
Now the big challenge, of course, you know, you just said the number one transfer portal class hasn't made the playoff the next year, but I believe he's going to make the playoff. I've believed he's going to turn this thing around quickly, and it sounds like you may have come around to that same belief right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent on this team, but I think that stat about the portal, what it proves is that it does take a while to get them all together.
Well,
you know?
But
he's getting better at that because he's been doing that for 5 years. Most coaches haven't.
But
Kelly only did it 1 year.
But he was very, very careful at the event he had to speak at last week.
Right.
Where he said, now we've got them in the door, now it's a matter of completely bringing them together, building the chemistry.
Yeah, and
he's like, that's not a given.
Yeah, and look, they could have a great season next year and you know, lose 2 or 3 games and not make the playoffs. I mean, it's a possibility because they do have a tough schedule, or at least on paper, and you never know who's really going to be good.
I'll tell
you
who they're not
going
to lose to. I don't know if
my mic's on now. Clemson.
Well, and I don't think they're going to lose to Clemson, but that wasn't the one form of. They're not going
to
lose to Ole Miss.
Teams. He's had no business losing.
They're not going to lose to Ole Miss.
He's lost to LSU when he didn't have any business.
They're not
going to
lose to Ole Miss.
And
right. Say that again, so we'll replay the tape after.
Okay, they're not going to lose. He's not going to lose to Ole Miss.
Okay, all right.
What about? They don't play Kentucky, but there's a team like that, I'm sure, on their schedule.
They do play Kentucky. Oh, they go to Kentucky.
Okay.
They play Tennessee, but too.
The 3-week stretch of Alabama,
Texas,
and Tennessee is very, very difficult. I thought it was a blow that the college football playoff wasn't expanded.
I told you it wasn't going to be.
But that's not the point I'm making.
That's the point I'm making.
The point I'm making for LSU 2026, and I'm just thinking 2026, this team could be very talented. This team could be – it could take a while for them to get going. And even if they're playing their best football in November, that is a very difficult stretch, those three games. And the fact that they could go 9-3 and still be a really good team, but that's 9-3 is not going to cut it to get into the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, sometimes things just happen. I mean, look – Lane Kiffin's Ole Miss team in 24 was probably he thought it was better than his 25 team. He didn't go into 25 thinking it was a playoff team.
No,
that team kind of overachieved because that's kind of how the portal is. Sometimes it takes a while, so you never know. Crazy stuff could happen. He could get in. He could not get in.
All right. Well, I'm gonna say this. Lane Kiffin just built the most talented roster in college football for 2026. Agree or disagree?
I would abstain because I don't know either way.
Yeah, I'd have to really dive into rosters.
And you got to remember, Jordan Seaton was the number one offensive tackle in the portal.
Well, he was still one of the top offensive tackles coming out of high school, too.
And he scored, but he scored higher than any other offensive tackle in the country.
But there's plenty of other players that don't enter the portal. That's what you got to remember.
Yeah, but he scored higher than anybody else.
Did not allow a quarterback hit all season long.
No, but that's what if you're going to compare
freshman All American. I mean,
not in the SEC, the greatest conference ever, five years ago.
That's true. Lane Kiffin built a quarterback room that's arguably second to none right now.
But right now, it's just a roster.
It's just a roster right now. It is just a roster. It's not a team.
That's right. And Kiffin, again, said that louder than anybody last week at that press thing he was at.
It's going to take some time. And you know, LSU fans should not, you know, just assume they're gone. Okay, because that's how you get disappointed.
No, but they should be excited.
Well, sure.
And they should be fired
up. Different.
And that's why LSU has sold over 33,000 or 36,000 new season tickets.
They're going to be fun to watch. It's going to be entertaining just to see who plays from the 41 portal guys. But it's going to be fun and exciting and an interesting season, even if they don't make the playoffs.
Well, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be – this is a – what he's done already is great. There's no doubt about it. They went into this whole thing knowing that they had to strike gold and through the transfer portal to give themselves a chance, and they certainly did. Now trying to put this all together, I think, is a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, but I think that they can do it. I'm not, you know, I don't have the pessimism or even the skepticism that I would have had in the past 2 or 3 years at LSU.
You have a very good coach. You have a good offensive coordinator. NFL teams are calling on him.
You have a good defensive coordinator.
Yeah. Good offensive line coach.
You have an improved defensive roster.
A much better coaching staff.
You have a much better everything. I mean, and you have, saying it again and again and again, a rejuvenated fan base. I guarantee you the stadium's going to be packed next year.
But if Sam Levitt hurts his abdomen, it could change everything. just like it did last year.
But they have two backups right now
that
are better. That quarterback room is the best it's been
Yeah. In a long time.
In years.
But there's a big drop from Leavitt to the other two. I know what you're saying.
I'm not dismissing that.
All right, let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. We got a lot of other stuff to get into as well. Garrett Nussmeier, by the way, trying to build up his draft stock. Good article by Glenn Gilbo right now on TigerRag.com. We'll hear a little bit from Garrett as well. So a lot to get to as we continue on here with Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Tiger Rag Radio is back, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
All right, we're back here on Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the editor, Glenn Gilbo. Over in Mobile, Alabama, Senior Bowl practices are underway. Garrett Nussmeier actually on the field for the first time on Tuesday, and it's a big week for Garrett as he tries to rebuild his draft stock. He, obviously, as we all know, going into the 2025 season, you were looking at a guy that was probably a first-round pick. Now, as it stands now, before any of the practices begin at the Senior Bowl, you're looking at a guy that might be drafted anywhere between the third and the sixth round. And we all know he had that ab injury. He talked a little bit about it here. I believe let's go with Cut 18, Andre, on what he told the reporters in Mobile, Alabama about the injury. And this was something that it was a game-time decision on whether he was actually going to be able to participate in the Senior Bowl. He did not accept an invitation until like the first week of January, and usually players accept invitations to the Senior Bowl sometime in December or right after the regular season, but he had to make sure that he was healed, ready to go, and here's him talking a little bit about that.
I had got re-injured towards the end of the season, and so I've been working really hard to try and get back healthy, and so as soon as we realized that, hey, okay, I can go do this, it was a no-brainer.
So
was that really Garrett Nussmeier?
That was Garrett Nussmeier. I don't understand why they don't have the greatest of audio there at the Senior Bowl. But
sounded like a robot.
It might have been the AI version of Garrett Nussmeier.
Well, he tended to sound like a robot in interviews.
Yeah, that's true.
He had so much media training. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, but and it was interesting when he was on off the bench with Matt Flynn and Jacob Hester on ESPN 104.5 and 104.9 in Baton Rouge, where they didn't, and I know you have it in your article, Glenn, that's up at TigerRag.com, they didn't know the exact injury until about a month ago that it was what the official diagnosis was?
That's what Matt said, but he wasn't really specific. I mean, it may well still be abdomen-related, which I would find it hard to believe if it's not. But you know, he may have the technical word for it and exactly what it is. And then he also said, and a plan to come back from it is what he also said. Like he really didn't have a good plan to come back from it until a month ago.
So, but he still didn't name.
No, he didn't name it. He did not name it.
Yeah. Well.
And that happens often with injuries, with players about to be drafted, and there's gonna, it always happens usually around the combine, the truth about an injury comes out, you know, and then sometimes the agents lie about it and it affects the draft. So the truth needs to come out. The truth will come out about his injury before the draft.
He did say in that interview on OTB, and I think he even said it during this press conference, that it affected his core so that he could not throw any type of throw, any type of pass.
With torque.
Velocity, a torque.
And spin. Yeah, well, we've been writing that since September. I know, but it was core. But it was nice to hear him say
it. But just go back to there's nothing wrong with him.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with him. Posturing by him, too.
He's fine.
Yeah.
Him, you're talking about Brian Kelly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and there was, well, yeah, he said it, and but Garrett said it, too, in interviews, you know, but that's what they do. I mean, it's
I remember him saying no comment a lot of times.
No, he talked about it a little bit. There's a link to it in my story. But you could tell just by watching, regardless of what anyone says, he was not throwing the ball the same.
Okay, so you think he'd get...
And the results were very different.
So you guys think he gets drafted?
Yes, he gets drafted.
You think he gets drafted in the on the first 2 days?
Depends how he does this week.
Yeah, I think this week, this is what ESPN's Jordan Reed said about Garrett Nussmeier. He'll be the most impressive passer this week because his anticipation and accuracy will shine in this setting. He also says Nussmeier has a daredevil mentality and isn't shy about throwing into tight windows over the middle of the field or outside the numbers. His experience with alternating protections at the line of scrimmage will also stand out. After a disappointing injury-plagued season, Nussmeier will be looking to recapture the early-round buzz he had entering 2025. And speaking to scouts over the past few weeks, the highest projections he's heard, this is Jordan Reed from ESPN, round three, but others had round five or six grades on him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, our boy Mel Kiper had him as a top seven quarterback. I don't know if that would mean that's probably second round or third round.
Wait, as of now? As of now?
As of early January when he entered the Senior Bowl. He's done nothing
since then. Yeah, I think they're projecting right now, they're projecting two quarterbacks, possibly three, to go in the first round. And I think that depends on if Trinidad Chambliss enters the draft.
We got 30 seconds here. To what degree did Nussmeier's injury torpedo this season?
I believe that if he was the 2024 Garrett Nussmeier, they would have been more effective passing, but I still think he was a total misfit for that scheme, especially with the worst offensive line in the history of mankind.
All right.
A little emotional. I think they would have been much better, but they probably still would have lost two or three games just like they did the year before.
Yeah.
And the offensive line was worse than the previous season. They actually found a way to run the ball worse than the previous season. So they'd have been better, but not playoffs.
Patrick Wright, voice of the Lady Tigers, will join us when we come back here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Get into the mix in 2026 with exciting programs from your East Baton Rouge Parish Library. Come and join your friends for line dancing, poetry writing, ASL signing, costume designing, and more. Start the new year at the East Baton Rouge Parish Library, the heart of our community. Go to ebrpl.com and get the details on all the fun.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
We continue from our Super Chevy Dealer Studios. Jeff Palermo along with Glenn Gilbo and Todd Horn of Tiger Rag. Andre Champagne, our producer tonight. And let's get to our first guest. That is the voice of the Lady Tigers, Patrick Wright. The LSU women's basketball team now up to number 5 in the coaches' poll. 19-2, 5-2 in the SEC. They've won 5 in a row. A nice win over Florida on Tuesday night, 89-60, after maybe 15 minutes or so of sluggish play, some turnovers, some missed shots, but LSU eventually righted the ship. And a couple more games coming up inside the Maravich Center this week, Thursday night against Arkansas, Saturday at 11 a.m. against Alabama, or Sunday at 11 a.m. against Alabama. Patrick, thanks a lot for joining us. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, doing good. Doing good. Glad to be kind of on a good winning streak here after a rough start. Things look like they're heading the right direction.
Well, what do you think are the biggest differences between this team now and what it was at the start of SEC play?
Defense. I think it took a couple of games to kind of get used to the speed of the SEC after the non-conference schedule. Yeah, and you've got a point guard in Jada Richard who is playing as good a defense as anybody in this league right now. And she absolutely shuts down point guards from other teams who score a lot of points. She held Liv McGill of Florida 10 points below her average last night, gave her six early, and then kind of figured out how to guard her and then closed her down the rest of the way. And then, you know, the freshmen have grown up a little bit. Grace Knox has strung together some good games after a couple of rough ones to begin with. But doing what they're supposed to do. On paper, this was a game where LSU should have dominated the boards last night. That's what they did. It was a game where they should have won by 20-plus. That's what they did. So they're methodically taking care of their business right now, and they're starting to hit their stride.
Hey, Patrick, they not only have, you know, dominated the boards last night, but they've pretty much been dominating the boards since those first two losses in the SEC. Do you think it's because they have such strong post players this year that they're now able to do that? I know the guards are contributing to the rebounds, but is it predominantly because they're able to control the inside with the posts?
Well, I think it's more, and Coach has been saying this for a while now, that she uses the term rebound by committee. You know, you don't have an Angel Reese or an Anissa Mora who you can count on for 15 a night when you need it, but if you're, Koval had 10 last night, and then Amaya Joyner had 10 on any given night, depending on which player. So I don't think you're going to see the huge nights, but you're going to see two or three players who can maybe get 8 or 9 a night. And what you said as well, the guards have started to rebound. Even, you know, Richard will get 3 or 4. Flauget will get 5 or 6. Michaela Williams will get her share. So it's everybody kind of doing their job and adding a few to make up for the huge numbers that Angel and Morrow used to put up.
They're still scoring at a very high clip, but they're getting their scoring from pretty much everywhere, it seems like. They're not dependent upon Michaela or Flauget or you know, anyone in particular to score. Do you think that's good, or do you think it's going to need – they're going to need somebody to step up in the big games?
Well, I think – Michaela's had some struggles of late. She kind of got rolling last night. Flauget has not shot particularly well in league play. The one thing I was dead wrong about is when we were scoring all those points in the preseason, I thought to myself, you know, because Jada was only averaging about 6 or 7 points, and I told myself, and anybody who would listen, hey, look, you know, I don't think we're going to need Jada to score a whole bunch of points, but she's averaging about 15 in league play, and we have needed a lot of those points. So I think having her as that extra threat takes some of the pressure off of Michaela and off of Flauget to have to show up and score 20 points a game every night, because we've actually done well without them playing their best. So I think it's a good thing that we're starting to kind of share it a little bit.
What do you think about these next two or three games? I mean, obviously Arkansas is not South Carolina or Texas, and neither is Alabama. What do they need to do in those two games besides win? What do they need to do?
Well, Alabama can be a little tricky. They beat us at their place last year in an overtime game. Flauget, that was a game toward the end of the year where she was hurt a little bit, was trying to play through it and just didn't play well. So you got to kind of get your attention a little bit just because you know what they did to you last year. Arkansas is not good. But just focus on the things. Again, you look at what matchups you should dominate, continue doing what you're doing. If this team shows up and plays their game, Arkansas absolutely cannot beat them, and Alabama would have a hard time beating them. So do what you do, take care of your home court, and then get these next two, and then be ready to see if you can go win a rematch in Austin.
And then, of course, South Carolina here on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, don't want to look too far ahead, but that's I wish we didn't have Texas coming up right in front of that. But if you get these next couple to get to 8-2 in the league, you're going to be right there at the top, and with playing the two teams who are in front of you. So the LSU kind of controls their destiny as far as how high they want to get in the league standings before it's all over with.
Patrick, has Kim, you know, traditionally, at least since she got to LSU, she hasn't put a lot of emphasis on the SEC race or winning an SEC title. But last night on the television, SEC Network, the broadcasters kind of emphasized that she's putting a little more emphasis on the SEC this year. Are you picking up any of that from her?
A little bit, you know, because in some of our visits, we talked briefly about standings and, you know, hey, you go win a couple games, let's just kind of see what happens. As we all well know, you don't have to win this league to win a championship, because we did it 3 years ago, didn't finish at the top. But I think now, with as competitive as it is, and you know you can play with Texas because you beat them, hey, why not? Why not go win one? It's not the end-all, be-all, but if you can add that to your collection, it's not a bad thing. And, of course, that puts you in a good place for seeding for the NCAA tournament if you can win it. So I'd say a little more emphasis. Not a lot, but a little bit.
Patrick, how do you look at the league this year as compared to maybe the last couple of years? About as strong as it's been in a long time, right? Maybe South Carolina is beatable. Maybe South Carolina is beatable this year. But now you got some new faces there, and Kentucky and Vanderbilt and Tennessee has had a very strong season.
Oh, this league is head and shoulders way better than it was when Coach Mulkey entered the league. You know, her first year, she took that team that she inherited with Caleb Pointer, who, you know, was an All-America type player, and the rest of the pieces, and took that to a top four finish in the SEC. I'm not sure that team would even be top eight this year, as good as the league is. Not, and no, obviously, discredit to them. But you mentioned Kentucky and Vanderbilt are much better. Georgia's better. Ole Miss has gotten better. It is, you know, what we've got 10 teams ranked in the top 25 right now. That kind of tells the story. This league, every night, you got a challenge. You got a couple, Arkansas is not great, and a couple others, but you got 10, 11 teams that on any given night can give you a hard time. And it's been fun. It really has, to see this many teams as competitive as they are, and it's going to come right down to the end.
So, Patrick, we're coming to the end here and got to wrap this up pretty quick, but you were honored by LSU and Coach Mulkey recently for 35 years of service as on the radio, broadcasting the games. How does the SEC compare this year to 35 years ago?
Well, I will tell you, there were a ton of Hall of Fame coaches back in the 90s, and then we had kind of a drop-off, and now I think it's picked back up, and I think we're right where we were back in the mid-90s.
I got it.
What about the competition?
Oh, the competition is I mean, it was only a 10-team league back then, but every night you were going against somebody who had a Hall of Fame coach on the sidelines. And we had a couple of tough years in those mid-90s before Coach Gunner got it rolling again. So that, to me, that used to be the golden era of this league, but I think we're entering a new phase of the new golden era.
All because of NIL. All because of NIL, oh, Patrick.
I wouldn't doubt it in the league.
Yeah. All right, man. I know you got your own show to do here with Coach Kim Mulkey, but we appreciate your time, and nice to be home this week, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I'm glad to finally unpack a bag for a change.
All right. Thanks a lot. The voice of the Lady Tigers.
Thanks,
the longtime voice of the Lady Tigers, Patrick Wright. We'll take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio when we come back from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo along with Todd Horn and Glenn Gilbo as we continue on with the show. We were just talking with Patrick Wright, some women's basketball, men's basketball. Well, not as good, obviously. A spirited game in Fayetteville on Saturday, but LSU comes up short, so they're now 1-5 in SEC play, right? Am I right on that?
1-6.
1-6. Oh, it's even worse than I thought.
Yeah, but.
Oh, here
but,
we go. But, here's but, the but. And here's. Okay,
but,
go ahead. Let's
but
go.
But Ken Pom still has them 42nd in the rankings, and the net has them 46. And if they can go 7-4, they can still make the NCAA tournament.
My eyes tell me they're not a very good
team. If they can go 7-4.
My eyes. And
I didn't say they could. I said if they could.
I think they have a chance to get within a couple of games of 500 over the next few weeks and then maybe hover around that point. If they can finish.
If they go 7-4, they would be 8-10.
Yeah.
The next three games are somewhat winnable, right? Oh, yeah. Mississippi yeah. State at South Carolina, Georgia, and then they host Arkansas again.
Yeah, I would say all four of those games, they have a chance to go 3-1 in
well,
those four games.
I mean,
games.
You have to, honestly, you look at what they did at Arkansas, against Arkansas, at Arkansas. You have to think that they've got a pretty good record against Arkansas in the PMAC.
Yeah, the first year Matt McMahon beat them.
Yeah, he's
such an uphill battle though, and they've had trouble stopping the three pointer.
Well, defense in general has been their problem, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many games
they've scored? Teams have scored 50 or more in a half.
Yeah,
them.
I mean Kentucky, Arkansas, South Carolina, Vanderbilt. I mean, everybody just seems to open up on them, can of whoop on them in, you know, one of the halves. It's crazy.
It just seems to me it's the same story every time. It, you know, it's either somebody else is going off on them or they have a crushing 4 minutes of horrible play. They don't make the right plays down the stretch.
Yeah,
and we've watched this.
I know, but this team is not like
they
last
are.
Year. No, in that sense, yes, I
the
agree with you.
Results are the same.
But the team itself, at least from an offensive standpoint,
they're better.
And a rebounding standpoint, they're more physical. They can
they're
rebound.
They're still not good enough.
I didn't say they were good enough. I'm saying that.
Well, you were saying that they could get in the NCAA tournament if they won seven of their last 11. They can't. They're not that good.
Right now, they would be, if they had any wins at all with those two rankings, they would be in the NCAA tournament.
But they don't. They figure out more times than not, they figure out a way to lose than they win.
Listen, I'm not saying this is going to happen.
Now for 5 years.
I'm going to tell you straight up, all right, that if they go 7-4, the rest of the SEC.
4 years.
If they go 7-4 over the next 11 games,
they'll be 8-10.
They'll be 8-10, and with the current rankings that they have in the palm and the net, they will be in the NCAA tournament. But I'm not saying that's going to happen.
I'm not. It's not going to happen. I just don't see it. They are. Thomas is a nice player. I give you that, and they did look. But he looked much more in the groove. Max McKinnon is a nice player. Markel Sutton's a good mid-major player that's a nice piece to a really good team, but he's not on a really good team.
Okay, well, listen to me. The first year, Matt McMahon started from nothing. Last year, just to skip over the second year, which was his best year, but last year, up until right now, last year they were competing with teams that had 8 to 10 times the budget that they had for their roster.
But they still lose. It's the same thing every time. You watch that Arkansas game, that is the same game we've been watching for the last 4 years with
Arkansas
this program.
Arkansas is one of the best teams in the country right now.
No, they're only
well, when is
20th.
LSU going to be one of the best teams?
Arkansas is one of the best teams in the country right now. I'm not saying they're one of the top two or three. I'm saying they're one of the best in the country. Vanderbilt is one of the best teams in the country right now.
And Vanderbilt was –
where was
horrible
this support,
2 years ago.
Where was this support during football season, Todd Horn?
This is not support. This is just a looking
at it. Sure sounds like
it. If I were sitting here listening to Jeff, I would think this is the same exact team that they had last year and the year before.
Well, it is a different team, but the results are very similar, unfortunately.
So far, the results. But why are they ranked 46 in the Ken Palm?
I have no
42
idea.
In the Ken
My
Palm.
Eye test tells me they're not that good of a team. They're okay.
They're getting a lot of mileage out of their win over SMU.
My eye test tells me that they are a much improved
it's still not
offensive
good
team.
It's still not good
and
enough.
And that they have a chance to win just about. I don't see a game on their schedule that they don't have a chance to win.
You don't let South Carolina come in here and steamroll you in the first half. Good team.
That was without.
I understand, but
DJ.
Still, you don't blow an 18-point lead. Good teams don't blow 18-point leads. I don't care who they're playing at home in the second half.
I didn't say they were a good team. I said compared to last year's team, which you painted in one same stroke, they're just like last year.
I'm like Glenn. The results are the same. Watch it, and it's like
the record's the same. Is what we're saying.
But all these games are just
it is
the
right
same
now.
Thing.
But if they go seven,
I think they have a chance to go 8-10. I really do.
And if they go 8-10, if they go 8-10 in the SEC, they will make the NCAA tournament.
All right. Maybe. They'll be on the bubble. So, they'll have a chance. But the SEC is not
LSU
good.
Is not losing Ole Miss in football, and LSU's winning or going to the NCAA tournament.
I didn't say that. Why are you – do you have a problem understanding?
I understand what you're saying, but I just don't see it. We'll see. But I don't see it. All right, we got to take a break. One more segment to go here from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. One more segment in hour number one. We'll be back after this here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, we got one more segment left to go in hour number one. Todd, I think you'll not be here for hour number two. You'll be on assignment?
I will not. I got to go battle an ice storm.
Okay. All right. I got a question here for you that I want to bring up to you. Verge Osberry brought it up in an interview with WAFB's Jacques Doucet about questioning whether LSU needs to continue to play a Power Four conference team in a non-conference in football because the last three Big Ten champions did not. And, of course, the SEC is requiring schools to obviously they're going up to a nine-game schedule this year and requiring schools to play another Power Four opponent. What's your reaction to Verge now speaking out against the idea, the guy that's been in charge of football schedules since for a long time now, saying, well, maybe we just need to go out and play a couple mid-majors and an FCS team in a non-conference?
I think it's looking at what's been going on to see who makes the playoffs and how they've been judging victories more. And I think he's coming from more of a position of power now than just as an associate AD or whatever his long title was before. And I think he's just voicing his opinion and hoping that it catches some traction because they if they're going to have more teams in the playoffs, whether it's 12, 16, or 24 in the coming years, they're going to have a schedule that gives them some wins, especially with the competitiveness of the conference the way it is right now.
Right. And it makes sense that, you know, when it was a two-team playoff and a four-team playoff, you really had to be, obviously, really good in the regular season, and you had to have those really good victories sometimes. With the playoffs up to 12 teams and maybe more, you don't need them. It doesn't make sense to play those games. Because you don't need the quality points. All you got to do is win whatever games you have on your schedule. And that's what these other teams have proven. So it's another ridiculous idea by Greg Sankey.
Yeah, why would you have to play, assuming Clemson's going to be good next year, why would you have to play a Clemson whenever you've got to play Alabama, Texas, and Tennessee back-to-back?
Yeah. I believe maybe there's part of this they're looking at it as, Florida's going to always play Florida State, and I think Greg is trying to keep it equal. Georgia's always going to be playing Georgia Tech. South Carolina's always going to be playing Clemson, so let's make sure everybody in the league can just to keep it somewhat equal.
I think LSU should bring back the Tulane series then because Tulane's always in the playoffs. So
I wouldn't use the word always.
I agree.
And from a fan perspective, you love the big game, right? I mean,
but the playoffs are better than the big games. It's all about the playoffs now, and too many people are not adjusting to the playoffs. And if Sankey still wants to play those non-conference teams. He's not adjusting to the playoffs. Another adjustment to the playoffs is getting rid of the SEC championship game and all the other championship games, but they won't do it because they want the money.
We got to get more into this. Talking about where Sankey's at, it just seems like there's a lot of pushback coming at him right now from all the different schools. And it doesn't seem like he's got a good handle on the path forward here.
He's living in the past of the SEC, yeah. I think.
And I think some of this private equity is going to be his downfall.
Yeah.
Because he's against it and they're going to need it.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Matt Moscona will join us. We'll talk LSU transfer portal. This has been the first hour of Tiger Rag Radio. More coming up on the Super Chevy Dealer Studios.
Y'all ready? Y'all ready? Yeah. Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here at Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And welcome to hour number two of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo along with the editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne with us as well as we continue on. Coming up a little bit later on in this hour, we're going to hear from LSU pitching coach Nate Yeske. But first, let's bring in Matt Moscona from ESPN 104.5 and 104.9. He joins us as we are done, finally, with the transfer portal period. Matt, how crazy has the last 3 weeks been? Breaking down IG films, breaking down plane rides, all that kind of stuff. How much have you slept, really, over the last 3 weeks?
3 weeks? We'll try 3 months. From the moment Brian Kelly was fired to now, it feels like it has just been one continuous wave of a story that hasn't stopped. From Kelly being fired to all the stuff with the governor and then, remember, the university president and then – Verge interim, then full-time, was he, wasn't he, then he was, and then pursuing Lane, and then hiring Lane, and the staff, and then the back and forth from Oxford. It has been, guys, like, this is my 19th season covering LSU football. Like, so I've been around, not as long as Glenn, but I've been around a while. That's not a shot, Glenn, it's just a statement fact. But, like, it's a long time. I've never seen anything like the last 3 months.
I agree totally, man.
The news cycle has been crazy. And then you mix in a few games in there as well. You know, they played Alabama. There was a bowl game. And I know. And we've only heard – and the other thing about all of this is that Lane has been here since November 30th, right, if I believe that's the date. He's only really spoken publicly 3 times.
Right, exactly.
But yet the news just never stops.
and he's on Twitter all the time, and so he's always
present
in the headlines.
Yes.
It's just the one thing that I've learned about him is he is absolutely a dare. Everyone thinks that the guy they see on Twitter is who he is. I think he is that's his front, right? Yeah. Like, that's where he's allowed to express himself. Because in person, he really strikes me as an introvert. Talking to people that know him well,
he
I don't think he's a guy that is going to love going to TJ Ribs and doing the coaches show and stuff like that. Like, he doesn't want to do media. He wants to tweet and hold himself up in his office and do yoga and coach. Like, that's what he wants
to
do.
Well, and just go back to his press conferences at Ole Miss. There's a Bill Belichick quality to him. I mean, he kind of mumbles through them. And I would
disagree with that. I had to watch a lot of his press conferences.
I would say when it's just mundane stuff and it's not the whole LSU thing, but there were a lot of times he just there was a thousand other places he would rather be than do that press conference.
He does a good job at his press conferences, though. He's professional about it. He might not enjoy it, but his press conferences are pretty sharp because he does answer questions, and he likes being asked questions, I think, much more than, say, Belichick. But I had to watch a lot of them, excuse me, when I was at Outkick because he was one of the schools I covered a lot, and he was pretty good. He was pretty good, even when things weren't controversial. But it's going to be interesting times. I mean, I'm waiting for them to have an actual press conference. I mean, do you think they're going to have one before signing day, Matt, or after signing spring?
Why would they? I mean, maybe like a pre-spring practice press conference, but like the real signing period is December, and we didn't do a post-signing day press conference. We didn't do a meet the staff press conference.
Yeah, I mean, he just signed 41 guys. You'd think we'd have a press conference on the freaking portal. You know, my goodness.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like we've all been, you know, forced to find different inroads to cover the team.
And I don't think anybody at a press conference is going to call him a hoe like they did at Ole Miss. You know, I mean, he's going to have some friendly press conferences.
At least at first.
Yeah, I was about to say, wait till he loses a game.
Yeah, yeah. That first time he goes for it on 4th and 4 and they don't convert and they lose because of it, it'll change then. Matt, what have you learned about in your coverage of the transfer portal and everybody this whole thing has been terrific. What have you learned about Billy Glasscock, his right-hand man? What makes him such an influential part, or how much influence he had with this transfer portal, and why does him and Lane seem to work so well together?
Yeah, I think the fact that they work well together is a good observation because I think they're both aligned. In talking to a lot of people at Ole Miss as well, something that the two of them did there and have carried here is that they apparently put together a deck. We'll call it whatever you want, a manifesto. I don't know about how they evaluate talent. And it's not just, we'll look at the star rankings and go get the 5-star or the highest ranked guy. I mean, like look up and down this portal class. I mean,
yeah, there's some sleepers in there.
I mean, Jaquan Sprinkle was a 2-year starter at NC Central, but I'm told like they love him. And so they have this whole thing of criteria where there's obviously physical attributes they have to meet, and then they bring him in and they certainly want to know like character and what type of teammate they would be in the locker room. And then there's a financial component of it, how they put the puzzle together. And the two of them see eye to eye on all of that stuff. So they know, like almost like an NFL GM is going to look at, you know, when you're looking at your salary cap, how much value do you put on this position and how much are you willing to spend on that player in this position relative to your roster? So I think, you know, Billy Glasscock might be a little more outgoing publicly than Lane Kiffin. I don't know if we'll ever see that just because I don't know that he's going to be a guy that does a lot of media, but he's, you know, the people that I've spoken to that have been in those meetings, right? The people that are, whether they're administrators or boosters or assistants or agents or parents or players that have all been through these meetings, they all say the same thing, that he's so smart, that he's so meticulous, very impressive. And I think when that becomes the familiar, detail oriented, when that becomes like the familiar refrain that everybody is saying the same thing after they meet with Billy Glasscock, I think you start to believe that is the case. And it's why they're able to sit down and you wonder how they put a portal class together like this. Well, it's not just stroking checks. I mean, I'm not naive. That's obviously a big part of it. But there's a lot to explaining to a player how they fit in what you're trying to do and managing all the things that matter to them. And that, they're really good at it, clearly.
Matt, how many guys from this portal class do you think will start this season?
Oh, man, I'd have to sit there and go through. Well, let's see. Obviously, Sam Leavitt, I think, will start. I think you'll have at least 3 on the offensive line. I think, obviously, Seton will be your left tackle. Aluba will be your right guard. I think one of the transfers will be your left guard, if it's Harper or Tompkins or one of those guys. I mean, it have to be the receivers because all the receivers now are transfers.
You don't have to name them.
Right, a couple of those. I mean, what are we up to, 5-6 right there?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, your two starting defensive ends are going to both be your transfers. That's 7. And then, you know, Ty Benefield at safety, that's 8. And then Dottery, the linebacker, will start, that's 9. And that's not even including the specialists.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Do you think that went into this saying – I know they didn't necessarily have a number, but how surprised are you that it ended up at being 41?
Oh, they had a number. They had a number.
Do you think 41 was it, or was it like did they?
No. And by the way,
was it like when you're at the
42? But
okay, 42 with a junior college player, I think. Unless there's a regardless, 41, 42, semantics, whatever. Was it kind of like when you're at the poker table and you just said, "Well, keep hitting," or not the poker, the blackjack table, keep hitting me, hit, because they were. They were on such a run here and such a rush.
So I think their original target was that they were going to land right around 30, and there were going to be single-digit defensive players, 5, maybe 7. But what happened is a lot of things that they didn't anticipate transpired, most notably the Ole Miss guys not coming. Because – listen, we can have all the conversations we want about tampering and legal tampering and whatever. The bottom line is Trinidad Chambliss, Kewon Lacy, Deuce Alexander, Winnie Watkins, the kicker, Carnier, like all those guys were coming. And then Ole Miss beat Georgia. The portal opened the next day. Those guys obviously weren't going to go in the portal. They're now preparing for another playoff game, a semifinal playoff game. And that gave Ole Miss the opportunity to re-recruit their roster. And their boosters decided we're not losing our guys to LSU. So they all opened up checkbooks and paid even more. And it's what transpired. So it forced them to refocus and sort of divert. Like now they had to go find a quarterback because Chambliss wasn't coming. Right. So, and they had to replicate that in several different spots. But then what happened eventually is as they got rolling and then you look at who's in the portal and how it can help supplement your roster, they just kept adding more. And nobody was going to tell Lane Kiffin no in this portal cycle, guys. I mean, it's like no one has told him no for anything yet. I mean, they're paying Charlie Weiss $2.5 million. They're paying Blake Baker $3 million. Yet it's like, oh look, there's an offensive tackle in the portal. Nobody thought was going to be in the portal, and he's going to cost $4 million. Pick him up. Let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just. I think so much of this was they were all in to win a championship. Now they'll figure out how to pay for all of it. And the ramifications in 27 and beyond, in 27 and beyond.
Matt, other than the Ole Miss players you mentioned that Lane thought he was going to get and then everything changed, were there some other players out there that he didn't quite get, that he wanted, that he didn't get?
Well, I think there's always guys that, like, go back to what we talked about with how they had an idea of what position they place value on. So, for example, like Cam Coleman, right? Cam Coleman from Auburn is an awesome receiver. I think, and LSU needed receivers. Clearly, they would have loved to have had Cam Coleman. I was told that Cam Coleman's number was 3.5. Well, that's hard to justify for a receiver when if you're scouting appropriately, and look at what they did. They go and get Jackson Harris, who was all conference at Hawaii. They got Trey Brown, who was an old Dominion receiver, who's 6'3", averaged 20 yards of reception. They got Trey Wilson from Florida, who was a former 5-star.
For a total of about $3-5 million, maybe.
right, exactly. So my point is, like, you could have gone all in on that one player, or you could go build this whole position group for less than that and have money left over to go sign more players to supplement with great depth. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are guys that they would have loved to have had, but it just didn't make sense with the way they build their roster. And that's why you have to have, I think, you have to have discipline with how you spend and how you build your roster, if you stay true to what your evaluation is. And so it's really like, do you trust your evaluation to go look at a JUCO offensive lineman like Jacoby Jones, who I think I've heard they love, but they think he's a 2-year guy. Like he won't be an impact guy this year, but they think in 27, he could be a starter for them. Well, if that becomes a guy like Damian Lewis, who started at guard on the national championship team, well, that's a huge hit, right? And you didn't have to go spend big, but you need a guard right now. So what did they do? They went and got a Luba from Maryland, who was a former top 100 overall player, and it was a 2-year starter in the Big Ten. So you can kind of see how they pieced it all together. I'm sure there are guys they would have loved to have had, but but it's also got to make sense for how they're building the roster altogether.
Yeah, there's like 21 guys that are underclassmen out of that 41. And there's going to be several players who really don't play a lot this year, I would think. So do you think he's going to be able to keep those guys the year after, even if they don't play? Like, you know, almost like a high school class.
Right. I mean, it's, look, some will obviously be multi-year guys that do stay, and some will go in the portal after 1 year. Like, I look at the running backs, for example. They signed five running backs, and if I remember correctly, and they retained Barry, and then Caden Durham came back. So all of a sudden, that room is really full. Like, it's hard to imagine all of those guys being back in 2027. So you're going to have attrition at spots. But I think it's why – I think one of the smartest things they did in building this class – so the four – and I again, like the number I counted was 42. But of the 42 that I counted, only four guys of the 42 have 1 year of eligibility remaining. 16 have 2 years. 15 have 3 years. And seven of them have 4 years.
Wow.
So they built this class – around guys who have already had college football experience with multiple years of eligibility remaining. So next year, you're not back here building another portal class with 40 plus guys in it. Like, maybe it's half that number, right? If you retain a lot of the guys we're talking about in this class. So I think this was done with a little bit of foresight as well to think about, okay, so as not to have this again next year, go intentionally and get guys with multi-years, which, guys, is a contrast to last year, right? I mean, last year was the number one portal class in the country as well, but eight of the 18 were guys with 1 year of eligibility, and then you knew there were going to be guys like Mansoor Delane, who was going to, even though he's a junior, he was going to be a one-and-done here. So I think that's really the big difference. Last year were one-year mercenaries to try to go all in. This looks on its face like it has some sustainability.
Matt, thanks a lot for your time, man. We really appreciate it.
All right, guys. We'll see you.
All right. That is Matt Moscona of ESPN 104.5, 104.9. We'll take a break. Of course, you know his show is after further review. You can hear it Monday through Friday, 3 to 6. Check him out at several other platforms as well, including Locked On LSU. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we still have Nate Yeske to get to, LSU's pitching coach, some more to get to. From the Super Chevy Dealer Studio, you're listening to Tiger Rag Radio.
Get into the mix in 2026 with exciting programs from your East Baton Rouge Parish Library. Come and join your friends for line dancing, poetry writing, ASL signing, costume designing, and more. Start the new year at the East Baton Rouge Parish Library, the heart of our community. Go to ebrpl.com and get the details on all the fun.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Funtenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was a life for me. Home with LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, and in case you missed any part of the show or want to listen to previous shows, we are available anywhere you get your podcast. Also, the show will be uploaded to YouTube About 40 minutes, 30 minutes or so after the show, so you can always catch us there at YouTube. Look for the Tiger Rag Radio, Tiger Rag channel. So a lot of ways to catch up. It's been a good show so far. We got Nate Yeske coming up. Really interesting conversation there with Matt Moscona. What are the numbers you're hearing, Glenn, as far as how much they spent here on this transfer portal? Total numbers.
You know, I haven't really heard any numbers, but I'm guessing it's got to be over 30 million.
Unbelievable.
You know,
amazing, huh?
But you know, there's about half the class, they probably got pretty cheap.
Pretty cheap.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you know, there's some guys from lower schools, there's some pretty young guys. So they probably got them not at the premium price. It's got to be between 30 and 35 million, I would think, you know, but college football, man, they're throwing money around like, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
How sustainable is it?
I don't know, man. I mean,
it can't be that sustainable forever.
No, I know. And
because the price tag's only going to go up.
Yeah. And you know, these boosters and supporters who have all kind of money and can take care of things. I mean, at some point they got to say, you know, I'm not getting a lot of money back.
Well, and I think that's the reason why you abruptly fired Brian Kelly the way you do, because you had this all-in mentality the last offseason, and it blew up in your face, and there was no way they could put their hand out and say, well, sorry, that didn't work out, but if you give us just a little bit more, trust me, it will really work out.
Well, yeah, and when they did hire Lane Kiffin, they got all kind of promises of money to come in. So here's what I think, you know, would make sense. All right, so he spent a bunch of money on this class, okay? And this is not a one-year class like Matt Moscona was just telling us. Man, there's a lot of 2 and 3 year players left. You know, there's a lot of players in this class that have 2 or 3 years at LSU if they stay. So I think what he could do is then, you know, you get that first season going, maybe you win a national championship or come close. Then you go back to recruiting high schools, which is cheaper. And let's remember, Kirby Smart won 2 national championships with only a couple of portal players.
Ohio State's team was two years ago was not – there was some key
– Yeah, exactly.
There were some key portal players.
That's how you do it. That would be the ideal way to do it if I was one of the boosters spending all the money. Like, you know, you got to go through the high school and then just pick and choose from the portal once you have a good base. And it looks like Lane's got the base now for 2 years. And one of the reasons Nick Saban gave him to take the LSU job – was because of the high school recruiting.
Right.
And I think he's going to switch to that over the next 2 years much more than he did this year.
And I think he knows he's striking while the iron's hot, right?
Right.
His clout will never be higher unless he wins a national championship.
Yeah.
It will never be higher than it is now unless he wins a national championship. And then, again, everybody will open up their pocketbooks and say, yes, here you go, Lane. We'll give you the money.
And you know, it's going to be interesting to see if he really does become this high school recruiter, because most of his experience is the portal.
Yeah.
And I think he likes it.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, when you talk about high school recruiting back in the day, these coaches would talk about, oh, this was a 4-year process. You can't just jump on a guy in the last month or so. Man, in the portal, you can jump on a guy on Monday and have him on Thursday.
It's speed dialing.
Yeah.
It's speed dating. Speed dating. It's exactly what it is. I've never participated in speed dating, but that's what it seems like to me. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Nate Yeske, LSU pitching coach, will join us. From the Super Chevy Dealer Studio, this is Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to... Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious... With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. While I'm a 4th-generation rice and soybean grower, you don't have to be a farmer to be a Louisiana Farm Bureau member. Membership has its benefits, from discounts on car seats, hotel rooms, and rental cars, to access to insurance you can count on to be there when you need, plus a whole lot more. We're 145,000 members strong, and we want you
to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Let's go! Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Jeff Palermo, along with the editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Glenn Gilbo. Glad you can join us again for all the past, well, not all of them, but the recent episodes on Tiger Rag Radio. You can listen back to them anywhere you get your podcast, and this show will be up on YouTube as soon as we're off the air, or about 30 minutes or so after we're off the air here from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. Our next guest, LSU pitching coach Nate Yeske, joins us on Tiger Rag Radio. Coach Yeske, how you doing tonight on this cold, cold night? I know you're probably eager for some really, really warm weather, aren't you?
Yeah, I think that gets everybody a little more excited to get out there to the stadium and watch some baseball, and we'll save the cold weather for football.
You're right about that. What stands out to you that as you watch this pitching, as you look at this group of pitchers, what really jumps out to you and say, hey, this is really encouraging about this staff, at least what you're seeing right now before you actually face any real opponents or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a chance to kind of sample it a little bit, obviously, through scrimmages and then through the kind of, I don't know if you want to call it non-conference, but when you get a chance to play somebody in the fall and get a little sense. I think we played Samford for around 20 innings and then getting a place to play Southeastern Louisiana and kind of getting out of our comfort zone. So they responded well to that. So it's nice to see that you can play a little bit out of your element. And then I would add to that probably just the versatility between the mix of left-handers, right-handers. We've got a lot of different ways, I think, to compete against our opponents and really – kind of give some different looks. So whether it's a high slot left-hander, a lower slot right-hander, a breaking ball guy, a changeup guy, I think we've got a lot of options that we can kind of throw at somebody else. And it seems to be a pretty cohesive group. They get along very well together. And I think that when you talk about culture, you talk about the locker room and things like that, when guys enjoy showing up to work together, that can kind of get you through some of those tough times.
Nate, this is Glenn. Where are you guys at as far as the openers? About 2 weeks away. What's the main thing you're doing with your pitching as far as the guys getting their stamina ready, or you know when do you start lighting up a little bit, or are you still building it up right now as far as innings and duration?
Sure, good question. You know, we're still building them up. I think you're always in a process of doing that a little bit. We're really at a disadvantage, I think, with the way that the calendar is set up for the NCAA, where we turn our kids loose. really across the country, I don't think any program is at liberty to work with their guys from about Thanksgiving on until they get back to school. So you're sending your kids home with a program, hoping that they'll follow it the best that they can and push when they need to and pull back when they need to as well. But by the time that they get back, you're looking at a 45-day window to make sure that everybody's in the right place. Hopefully they've been doing the things that they need to so that you can accelerate in the areas that you need to at that time. And then it does take on a different kind of feeling and persona than the fall did. The fall, everybody's playing. They know how that goes. There's maybe not as much on the line just because you know you're going to come out and scrimmage again next week. Now that it starts to matter a little bit more and guys are competing for spots and understanding that we're not going to put everybody on the field on any given day and the spots are earned, there gets to be a little more competitiveness to it. So for our guys, helping them understand what they do well, and I really think a part of the game that isn't particularly seen from a lot of fans or people outside of the sport is your routine. Getting those things nailed down that you're consistent with, and then being able to navigate the space with regards to things that might be a little bit foreign. You get on the road, the backstop looks a little bit different. The confines play a little bit different. I know back in the day, old Dodger Stadium, it seemed like home plate was a mile away because the backstop was so far behind. Other parks, it's right there behind, like Wrigley, where it's tucked up close, and it just gets a different feel for it. So all of those aesthetics kind of come into play at times, whether you intend them to or not. And we just try to get our guys as familiar as they can with the things that they can control. So we really reinforce those things, try to stay focused on those handful of items, and really just stay locked into the process of those.
Well, I think you got a couple of guys who might be pitching in Dodger Stadium in Wrigley Field for too long.
There's a pretty good chance, especially the last couple of years looking at some of those guys, and there are definitely more on the way.
Talking to Nate Yeske, LSU pitching coach here on Tiger Rag Radio. Nate, if you could, who are maybe six or seven guys that are in the running at this point for the three-man starting weekend rotation?
Yeah, again, another good question, just because it's been a very competitive fall and competitive spring. You know, when you look at guys like William Schmidt and Cason Evans, who have been here in the mix before, Cooper Williams is certainly familiar with doing some of those things. Some of the young guys like Reagan Ricken and Marcos Paz, Cooper Moore, who's a guy that we brought in through the transfer portal, has done a lot of good things as well. So I think there's some competitiveness there. There's going to be some mixing and matching of things that we like. Zach Cowan is pitching that role, as is Jaden Newt. So, you know, we feel like depending on whether teams handle right-handers or left-handers well, maybe certain pitch types, things like that, we have options to do some stuff. And I think if you look at, it's hard to raise the ceiling, especially when you're looking at the last handful of years from guys like Skeens and Floyd, Jump, Holman, Ianson, Anderson, stuff like that, to expect, okay, is it going to be better than that? I think you got to be realistic in looking at, are these guys going to play to their potential? And I like the fact that we've raised the floor a little bit and given ourselves more options to go out there and combat whoever it is that we're playing.
There was so much hype going into last season regarding William Schmidt, because you're looking at a guy that, one, he's a Baton Rouge kid. I think everybody, a lot of LSU fans were very familiar with what he did at Catholic High in Baton Rouge. And then, of course, could have been a top 10 pick in the 2025 draft. And, you know, last, I guess it would have been 2024 draft, but you know what I'm saying. 2025 didn't go maybe as well as maybe what he anticipated, but I know he still had a lot of bright moments. And Jay Johnson's quick to point out he never lost a game. He had a perfect record as far as win-loss goes. What are you seeing from him now that maybe you didn't quite see at this time last year?
Probably a better self-evaluator. I think a lot of times when kids come out of high school, it was easy. And they weren't particularly challenged. So when they do get challenged with certain areas, they're not so quick to absorb how they need to navigate those obstacles. And William has done a better job of understanding what it is that he does well, what it is that he needs to continue to improve upon. But really, we're having a discussion today. He had thrown a bullpen, and he's gotten a better sense of awareness of what teams are going to try to do to him, how they're going to try to take certain pitches away, a certain side of the plate, and how he needs to navigate those types of things. So, you know, the thing that I think, fair or unfair, for kids like William and others that are in his position, you look at the expectations. And granted, part of our discussion today was, boy, you've been able to do a lot of this stuff here at LSU, getting a chance to experience all of these things, go to Omaha, experience that. Whereas even if kids are high picks out of high school, they may spend their first year to 2 years in rookie ball not pitching in front of anybody, not necessarily pitching in games that matter as much as they may on a Friday night in the SEC or in a regional, super regional, Omaha-type setting. So to be able to grow and have to do it in kind of a pressure-type environment, I think can be a real daunting task for young guys, because there's two things that are going on. One, they're facing kids that, like a Dylan Cruz, who might be playing for somebody in a regional game or a super regional game, that have a world of ability and aren't very far from the big leagues. And just, you know, 10 months ago, you're competing against high school kids. So that jump is enormous in that sense. And then on top of that, you've got guys who are sitting in the other dugout who are obviously good at their job. So their job is to make life a little bit more difficult for you as well. And I think William has done a good job of navigating that space, because it's tough to be a freshman and just jump in and have a lot of success. And he certainly had his share of it. And I think he's hungry for more now. And I'm excited to see how he's going to continue to pursue that.
Nate, you mentioned that, you know, it's pretty competitive for that, that weekend rotation. Last year it basically stayed the same most of the season. Do you think it could change between the opening weekend and the SEC opening weekend, those three guys? Or, I mean, I'm asking you to look ahead.
Yeah, and I think that's not because somebody, you know, you're looking at it saying, well, this is the best of what we have. I think it's going to be extremely competitive. And I think that those that will earn that opportunity, there'll be some ebbs and flows. There'll be some changes to those types of things if and when necessary. But it's the same thing that I tell guys that anticipate being starters relative to a game. No coach has ever taken a pitcher out of the game who was a starting pitcher. He usually takes himself out either by an elevated pitch count or a string of things that have happened ultimately through maybe a lack of performance or bad luck. You say, all right, man, like those things have caught up with you, and now we gotta make a move. So, you know, the guys who will stay in that mix and continue down that path in a starting capacity will be the guys who are the most consistent. And that's going back to what I mentioned earlier with the routines. If you can stay locked into the things that you can control, and it seems to be really something that's discussed with a lot of coaches across sports, no matter whether it's football, basketball, baseball, you name it. Nobody wants to get outside of the boring, and, you know, they're always looking for what's next. And a lot of times when things don't go well, any type of individual in sports looks back and says, well, we just got back to the basics once they start having success again. So the question is, why did you get away from it? And that's where our focus has really shifted on across the program this year, is just what you do good, be great at it. And so if it's focusing on the things that we can control and we do that well, well, can we continue to do that day after day? And if our guys can do that, they'll keep themselves in the rotation.
Hey, Coach, this is Andre. I know it's easy to talk about the Kaysen Evans and the Maverick Rizzies and all those guys, but I think a few guys that have gotten kind of lost in the mix are Santiago Garcia of Oregon, and then you have Devin Sheeran coming back from injury. How are those two guys doing, I guess, just in preparations for this season, and what have you seen out of them?
Yeah, Santiago Garcia, a couple of things I think they're in his favor is played at Division I level, you know, in a competitive conference. He's played in the postseason, so he's had, you know, his opportunities to be tested a little bit. And even just his relationship with Stephen Milam, that perspective that Stephen provides for him really, I think, helps shorten up that learning curve, and he's been great. You're talking about a left-hander with a four-pitch mix, three to four solid to above-average pitches. Devin Sheeran, is now that he's healthy, is giving us some good runs. And again, it's probably just for him establishing that consistency and knocking off some of the rust that he may have accrued by not being out there last year. And another name that I would throw in there is Ethan Plogg, left-handed transfer in from a junior college who, if you ask a lot of our guys, man, we don't like facing that guy. I think he's had a lot of success, and it's unique in how he does it. It's a different presentation, different movement package, and that's the funny part about baseball is there's deception that's involved from the pitching standpoint that maybe you don't see those types of things in other sports where that comes into play. So those are some guys I think that have done well, and you're right. You know, Maverick Rizzi's been throwing the ball as well as anybody recently. He's really matured and really grown, not just as a player, but as an individual, and he's rubbing off on other guys. And Cooper Williams, and Kaysen Evans are doing a really good job of kind of rubbing off on some of the other guys that are around there. And one name that hasn't even been mentioned is Gavin Guidry.
Yeah.
Gavin's had a big say in what we're doing, and it's sometimes kind of easy to forget somebody when they haven't been in the mix. Gavin's pitched a lot of big innings in this program, and you know, he's looking forward to getting back out on the field and competing, and he's done a great job of kind of working to be the glue to help, you know, hold this thing together as best as we need to on any given day.
Man, I bet he's chomping at the bit, the pitch. It's been a long time for a guy that has competitive as him. Coach Yeski, thanks a lot, man. We appreciate it. Good luck this season. We'll try to get you on during the year. I know it's a little tougher at that point, but we always appreciate your time.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys. Go Tigers.
Nate Yeski, LSU's pitching coach. We'll take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio when we come back.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
All right, went long there with LSU pitching coach Nate Yeski. Why don't we do this? I know we're coming up on another break, so let's go ahead and take that break, Andre. We got to get one more break out of here. We get out of here, so let's do that and come back. Big news involving a former LSU offensive coordinator. I want to get Glenn's take on that when we come back. You're listening to Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Well, the 2019 LSU National Championship football team keeps producing. Joe Brady, named the head football coach for the Buffalo Bills. He's been the offensive coordinator there. He's got a tight relationship with Josh Allen, probably a big reason why he got the job. I don't think we're surprised that Joe Brady is a head coach. Especially when you hear Ed Orgeron talk about him, Glenn, he knew that this guy was a up and coming start. I mean, he probably didn't know how good he was. I know when he went to Carolina, it didn't work out for him there as an offensive coordinator with the Panthers, but found a good situation in Buffalo, found a quarterback where he could be the quarterback coach at for a good quarterback.
He found that out at LSU as well. Joe Burrow made him.
Yeah, Joe Burrow made him. But what do you think? Andre, you said it earlier. He's what, 36, 37? Youngest?
He's 36.
Coach? 36, which will make him the youngest active head coach in the NFL.
1 year younger than Kellen Moore.
Yep.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, and Brady's an amazing story because he was a grad assistant at Penn State for a couple of years and caught on with the Saints. And I swear to God, when he started attracting a lot of attention, really even before the 2019 season started, with some of the wide receivers talking about him and his drills, and then the offense was great right off. I never forget, because I covered the Saints at the time for Gannett, and we asked Sean Payton about him, and I'm telling you, Sean had like this blank look on his face. He had to think about it for a second. He couldn't remember what the guy did.
Yeah,
he really didn't. And then later on, he had a better answer because he kept getting asked about it. But he was really a lower rung offensive assistant, kind of like an analyst, really, with the Saints. But he really was good with LSU as a pass game coordinator. He probably got too much attention early on because really it was Ensminger.
But it was a great pairing.
It was a great pairing.
New school versus old school.
Right. And Brady helped a lot, but people forget Ensminger actually put in the five wide offense late in the 18 season.
Yes.
When Burrow really started to blossom late in the 18 season, and then he just exploded. But Brady took some lumps at Carolina and then he was really good at Buffalo. That was a great pairing. So there's been less qualified guys become head coaches in the NFL, but I think this is definitely a good bet for him. But he's going into a pressure cooker because they gotta advance to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's the Bill. The Bills have always been so close but can't get there.
Yeah.
No, I was gonna say, him implementing the RPOs in 2019 really did change offensively college football for a while, if you really think about it, because a lot of offenses weren't really RPO heavy until really then, and they just could not stop it. Defenses literally could not stop it, and honestly, Alabama really used the RPO in 2020 right after that season, and no one could stop them then. So it was just kind of he's a genius.
Was he at Carolina when Darnold was there?
I think so. I don't know.
I should have probably looked.
Maybe
that up.
Dalton. I think Dalton's last year or two. But that was such a bad situation.
That was bad situation.
Bad situation.
Bad situation. So
what was amazing too about Joe Brady and Ensminger? I never forget Joe Burrow told us about halfway through that season in 2019 that almost there was like about five games in a row where they had all these game plans they worked on all week, and then the defense did something early in the game and they just threw the entire game plan out, and Ensminger and Brady were just doing it as it came into their head, you know. That was just brilliant.
They work so well together in those fist pumps, you know. They got that camera in the coordinator's booth and those guys would be fist pumping each other after a big touchdown pass to Chase or Jefferson or something. And I mean, it was
everything. It was a perfect storm. Yeah. They had great receivers, a great quarterback, and they really took advantage of that with good coaching.
Well, it'll be interesting. It's another team that I think LSU fans will be rooting for. You know, they root for the Bengals. They root for Justin Jefferson. They root for the Commanders and Jaden Daniels. And now
I still root for Sean Payton.
He
blew that game.
He did.
He really did. I love the guy, but he kind of blew that game.
We'll have to talk about that next week on Broncos Rag. But this is Tiger Rag. That does it for Todd Horn, Glenn Gilbo. I'm Jeff Flermo, Andre Champagne. We'll see you next week.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.